Hello, and welcome to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and live from New York, in studio, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much. I love being in the Mecca in general, but being in a small glass-enclosed room with you in the Mecca, just that much more special.
For several hours, you know? Yeah. We've already... So far today, we've knocked out several videos. Content is king, you know. Yeah. We're hitting the video market.
Yeah, we're here at SI Studios. I'm not sure if it's your mom's basement or my mom's basement, but there's a real mom's basement vibe to this place.
Yeah, we're warmed up. The point is, we're warmed up, and so for today, we're going to preview the Eastern Conference, and then we're going to hang out and on a separate podcast. Preview the Western Conference, which we'll release next week. And then we'll have just a bonus hour of takes for also for next week.
We are going to say everything that you need to hear and many things you don't need to hear.
A lot of stuff you don't need
to hear. A lot of extraneous information over the course of hours here this afternoon. And hopefully we'll give you some knowledge about the league. Hopefully a few laughs. Hopefully a few tears. I think we're going to try to cover every bit.
I'm fired up because we've sat through several meetings today for preseason meetings, and we've done sort of the basic predictions on some of the videos, and now we get to just sort of hang out.
You know what's been amazing? We have not agreed on anything yet.
Yeah,
that's great. That's always good.
That's why we work.
Yes.
But let's jump into it. Let's talk Eastern Conference.
Let's do it.
So I spent about 20 minutes this afternoon.
You always are bragging about how much preparation time that you've done, but it's never an impressive amount of preparation time.
I threw together some questions here. For each team, I have one question.
Okay.
And we'll just run through the East in no particular order. But I want to start with the only team that matters to a lot of people in the East, Cavs.
Not the Orlando Magic.
I have some Magic takes.
Yeah, I got some Magic takes too.
So, do you think LeBron is done winning titles?
Ooh, that is a very good question. I'm going to say no just because his career has taken so many different turns. You almost never know what's going to be around the next corner. Is he going to be able to sneak out a title or two later on down the road, as part of a super team with his... banana boat buddies.
I should have phrased it, is he done winning titles in Cleveland?
Ooh, well, that's a different question. But I think at some point along the way, there's going to be another LeBron title. Do I see a LeBron title this year? I'm willing to bet against it. I'm not going to rule it out completely, but here's what I'm worried about. We haven't talked a ton about what they've lost. And mm-hmm. I think they've lost some meaningful pieces. I mean, it starts with
20 minutes on Delly.
It starts with Dellavedova, your favorite player, and it's really weird that you're wearing his jersey
today. How will
today.
They ever replace him?
And that's a legitimate loss, though.
Yeah.
And I think you take him out of the mix, you take a guy like Mozgov out of the mix. I know he wasn't great last year. I love Tristan Thompson a lot more than Mozgov. I love the version of Kyrie Irving we saw during the finals a lot more than Dellavedova. But these are rotation pieces that didn't necessarily get replaced. Mm-hmm. And then you just start to think about, okay, if you're going to take down a team like the Warriors with their firepower, with their versatility, with all these guys who can play multiple positions now that they've got Kevin Durant, it's only increased. You need as many competent and quality rotation guys as you can. And I think they actually took a slight step back this year. You throw in the J.R. Smith question mark. When's he going to be ready? When he's going to be up to full speed? Can they get him under contract? It's just, to me, they just took a half step back when the Warriors took two big steps forward this summer. And that's what I'm worried about, is these teams were very, very even during the finals. That's why it went seven games. That's why it went to the fourth quarter.
Well, they were even. The Warriors had several handicaps. I mean, Iguodala couldn't really walk by the end of that series.
Yeah. Bogut checked into Bogut witness protection out. Program.
Yeah. Yeah. But clearly, you're not a lot of love for the work of Mike Dunleavy as the ultimate replacement.
I like the Mike Dunleavy addition. I think that's just an extra shooter. And I think LeBron's going to trust Dunleavy. I mean,
yeah.
If there's... there's going to be a...
But it's fair to not give a shit about Mike Dunleavy. Yeah. We're okay.
Yeah, there's like a Paxson Kerr vibe to Dunleavy where I think, game on the line, LeBron will kick out to him and trust him to take that three-point shot for sure.
Uh-huh.
I think he's a tough-minded two-way guy. He kind of fits. But I think overall, I think even you would agree with me. Overall, their summer was a step back relative to the Warriors.
And here's where I come down. I mean, I want this... I have loved the Cavs' victory lap all summer long. They've been popping up on social media, partying. they were at the Indians game last week and like as a group and everybody was on the Jumbotron. It was great. And I kind of want to keep it going as long as we can. But and it's also sort of, I thought this entire season was going to be like that for them, but I think we're going to hit a point later in the year, February, March, where it becomes fair to wonder again whether Love is the best third guy for them. And I mean, like, the Love for Melo trade has been sitting there for a year or so now, and it will still be there. But like,
well, it's also going to be fair to wonder, is Kyrie still the right guy? Because
that's what I mean.
Is he going to be able to play an entire postseason like he played in the last three games of that final?
Yeah. And it's a fair question. And everything broke right. It was one of the cooler sports stories I've ridiculous. Ever seen.
I still can't believe it happened.
But I'm wondering if it's possible to replicate that in Cleveland. And I think that is going to be as big of a question as any, like more so than can they beat the Warriors, because like the Warriors are going to be really, really good and the Cavs are going to be on cruise control for most of the year. And the answer most of the year will look like no. I mean, I think they'll need to get lucky. And then we'll see what happens. But like they had to get lucky last year.
Yeah,
and
I wouldn't
it's
even
entirely
call it,
possible.
I wouldn't even call it luck. I just, you know, because that seems like it
well,
almost
injury,
takes something away
injury
from
luck.
For sure. But like they're going to need a lot of good fortune to happen, right? Because so many things
good fortune
broke
as
their
opposed
way.
To luck. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know. It just it's a slightly nicer euphemism. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I don't ever want to take away from LeBron and say, you know, it was lucky. But there was a lot of things that went.
Yeah,
exactly. Perfectly to play out how it did, and they still only barely won.
That's
right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, it. They need to get lucky, and then LeBron has to be superhuman, and that's exactly what he like. Last year was top five performances I've ever seen. Yeah. So it's
well. Here's what I would be saying if I was a Cavs fan. It's really a simple, like, very, very, you know, straightforward, like, surface level take, but it's true. LeBron owns KD. I mean, he's always owned KD. If Kevin's going into that finals matchup, he's back on the stage, first time since what, 2012? It's been a long time. It's the year of KD. He set the whole tone with his free agency decision. He probably spent the whole season trying to determine who's going to be the alpha guy, him or Steph. They get all the chemistry worked out. He's ready to go. They're back in the finals. And now he has to conquer this guy who he's just never been able to get past. You know, if I'm LeBron, I think the number one thing I've got going against the Warriors is a big time psychological edge. Maybe Draymond can help kind of pick up for some of that with, you know, kind of being on a revenge mission. Maybe Steph can kind of, you know, help, you know, at full strength, kind of set the tone for that series in a way he wasn't able to last year during the finals. But if I'm LeBron, I'm going against Kevin Durant. I have 100% confidence I'm going to win that series.
Yeah, that also makes me upset because it would have been more fun to see Durant have to answer that call on his own team. Because there's a chance that he won't really have to do a whole lot.
It's the ultimate compliment to LeBron that his top two competitors, Steph and Kevin Durant, have to team up to take him down.
Yeah,
I mean, that's pretty cool.
That's true. That's true.
It's like if Ewing and Barkley, you know, they're lining up, or Karl Malone's lining up.
Yeah.
With a guy like Charles Barkley.
Yeah. Look, LeBron's had to face much better teams than Jordan ever did.
Well, this is a side conversation. Yeah. We're going to be here for another hour.
I'm just saying, if you go down his finals opponents.
If you try to start nitpicking MJ, only one of us is going to walk out of the studio alive. I don't know if it's going to be you. I don't know if it's going to be me. But we're fighting to the death over MJ's legacy.
All right, fair enough. Nets. We're moving on. Let's run through some teams.
Whoa. You can't go from the Cavaliers to the Nets.
We're going from the top to bottom. This is a Dickensian podcast.
It was the worst of mother bleeping times for the Brooklyn Nets.
Look, here's my question. Can you name five Nets starters?
This is to me. Starters?
Yeah.
I got Lopez and Lynn. I'd probably start Hollis Jefferson. That's
let's see,
three.
Let's see.
That's all I got, really.
I believe Bo, is it? I know Bogdanovich. Is it Bojan?
We'll just go Bohan.
Bohan. Yeah. So Bogdanovich, he should be solid.
Get out of here. Tell me one thing about
Scola?
His game.
Bogdanovich. See, this is why you need to play fantasy basketball. Okay. Bogdanovich can fill it up.
Are you sure you have the right Bogdanovich?
I think
50%
so. I think
chance.
They're about even. Yeah, I watched them both in Rio.
Okay.
Anthony Bennett, maybe.
No, he's not.
I think Scola will be the starter.
Maybe as a spot starter. I don't know.
Bottom line, the Nets are probably the saddest team I can remember.
Terrible. You know, they were dead last in my entertainment value rankings last year, and it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
And they got significantly worse this year.
Well, you know what's crazy is that the Nets, like, they've been this depressing for, like, 30 years. Even when they made the finals with Jason Kidd, like, that was a pretty sad roster. When Richard Jefferson is your second coolest player.
So let me ask you this. You know how when they made the move from New Jersey to Brooklyn, it was going to make them like a lot cooler and was going to kind of like reinvigorate them? I was going to say, is it now actually more depressing because they're in Brooklyn trying to wear these cool jerseys, trying 100%. To play on this cool court, and they just are awful and it makes it just that much worse?
100%. At least there was a point of pride as sort of like the little brother in New Jersey, and now they're kind of just like a failed Jay-Z investment. They're like title.
So let me ask you this. Should they move back to New Jersey? And if so, like, what's the right place in New Jersey they should move to like fit their current vibe so they don't seem quite as depressing, like Trenton? Yeah. Or should they go like Cherry Hill? I mean, where are they going?
Maybe Patterson. Yeah, I don't know. The Nets, I think this is probably as much time as we'll spend on the Nets all year.
Here's a question, though. Did Carmelo come at Jeremy Lin with those comments? Basically saying, believe it or not, he's their franchise player. I mean, that seems like a dig.
I feel like Carmelo's been taking passive-aggressive shots at Jeremy Lin for like 4 years. So I didn't even see the comments, but yes.
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
It did kind of seem like it.
Yeah. The one other thing I have to say about the Nets is that at the time, Jay-Z came out with the uniforms, and like everything had been carefully picked, and it was all very like minimalist. And I want to add that the uniforms and like the court, it's like a darker arena. It all makes it more depressing.
He dropped the Nets faster than he dropped a mill. I mean, like, he just moved on so quickly from the Nets.
The Nets were cool for about 5 minutes, like planking. Yeah, well, let's move across
Very
town.
Very symbolic.
Let's move across town.
Laying down and getting stepped over. That's the Brooklyn Nets. Human planking.
New York Knicks.
Gigantic bust potential. I'm just going to come out and say it. I don't think it's going to work.
Yes, I agree.
That's probably not even a hot take.
My question, we've talked enough about the Knicks. My question is deeply hypothetical.
All right.
Would Kristaps Porzingis have been better off in L.A. and put D'Angelo Russell on the Knicks?
I mean, you skipped over the Philadelphia scenario, which makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, but he wasn't going to go. Like, he begged out of Philadelphia.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just got to kind of overrule that, don't you?
Sure.
I mean, maybe he should have.
I'll wonder forever whether Hinkie was really empowered to make the Okafor pick, because that was just a terrible decision.
I mean, I kind of think that Russell might have found his groove in LA. I understand that I was like the number one Russell detractor.
Yeah.
But if Luke Walton is like the Russell whisperer and like he just plays the super, you know, player friendly angle, that could get the most out of him.
But imagine Luke with Kristaps.
Yeah, Kristaps. I don't know who is the ideal coach for Kristaps Porzingis, because he's sort of like from the future.
Right.
And you almost need one of these guys like Popovich or Kerr, who's just like an absolute, you know, basketball genius in terms of getting the most out of their guys to make it work. I mean, is that Jeff Hornacek? Probably not. Is that Phil Jackson trying to squeeze him into the triangle? Probably not. I do worry about Porzingis. I think he's going to have
such a mess of a roster.
Because here's the thing. When you're as talented as him and as young as him, you're definitely going to take a step forward, right? But are we fully convinced they got the most out of him in year one? I'm not. And then are we fully convinced that they're going to be able to get the biggest improvement out of him in year two, given the pieces around him, given all the question marks in the front office and the coaching staff? I'm not at all. And I don't want to be in this position where he's 23 or 24 and I'm still thinking, God, he should be a lot better than he is.
Yeah, I think we're too early to like concern troll about Kristaps, but it's definitely, the roster is a mess, and the Lakers already had Jordan Clarkson. And so a couple days ago, I was like, you know what? Maybe if we could go back in time and send him straight to LA, like it would have been a nice mix. And D'Angelo Russell, I'm with you. Like, he's great too. And putting him on the Knicks would have been a lot of fun. Last Knicks question. Is there a chance that this is a stealth tanking operation, and this is, it all sets up perfectly? Like, Phil Phil is either smarter than anyone realizes or dumber, and I think it changes by the day.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I don't know if I really want to give them the credit on a stealth tank. Like, yeah. I don't know if they're that devious. Because here's my biggest argument against the stealth tank: Joakim Noah's contract. That thing is ludicrous. And I mean, there's got to be a way to do that where you're not committing to 4 years for him if you're really just trying to throw away this season, right? Like, I actually think getting Rose on a one-year contract, or even like what Chicago did getting Rondo on the one-year contract,
yeah,
there's stealth tank capabilities there, because those guys are probably going to fall apart and screw your team up in some way, and you're going to run to the bottom eventually. But if that was your plan, why did you throw all this money at a Joakim Noah where the injury risks are huge? Yes, it might help you be worse this year, but you've also saddled your books for multiple years down the road.
Maybe our unified theory of Phil is that he is smarter than anyone realizes, but then has like these points of vulnerability where like whatever happened between him and Joakim Noah at his like their like 3-day hangout in Montana, he just couldn't resist handing him $75 million this summer.
Yeah, that seems like a gigantic mistake.
Yeah. Well, Noah is a good dude to have around the locker room, and the money is not going to make sense for like half the guys that are signed.
Yeah.
So I think they'll have space anyways. And Noah off the bench for 20 minutes. I don't.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
You're really trying to rationalize a terrible decision is what you're doing. Yeah. And it's nice because I'm actually in the studio with you, so I can see you rolling your eyes at your own arguments. And that really just completes the picture.
Okay.
But no, are they going to be terrible enough to tank? I think if that's the way that we word this question,
yeah,
very good opportunity for that.
Yeah. Well, I think they would be better off clearing everything out this summer, including trading Melo, including definitely not re-signing Rose. And then it's a deep draft. Even if they're like in the bottom half of the top 10, they're in good shape to get Kristaps some help.
Do we worry that Melo enjoys the offseason so much that he's just never going to give them the go ahead on the trade?
What do you mean? Why would a trade?
Well, because like theoretically, he would be the guy pushing for a trade if it was to get to a contender so he could play into June, right?
Yeah.
But Melo just owns the summer. Like,
yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, is he so upset about his life right now that he needs to like push out? Or does the market and the role and everything he's got going for him in New York, is that still so tempting that it's like, well, I don't really need to get out of here?
Yeah.
Because it's up to him whether he moves, right? I mean, he has to go to them and say, hey, get me out of here.
I think another year of just failure and like sadness could push him over the edge. And well, I also think that the trade for Love is sitting right there. So the chance to go try to take down the Warriors with LeBron will be tough to pass up.
So maybe it wasn't a stealth move to tank. Maybe it was a stealth move to anger Carmelo. Like, you bring in a super ball dominant point guard in Rose, he'll just leave him rotting on the wing. You bring in a center who can't stay healthy, so they can't play defense. So Melo's constantly looking around at his teammates saying, hey, how come we're not protecting the rim?
Yeah.
And maybe you get him out of this comfort zone he's been in for a couple of years where it's been good enough, you know, to kind of justify it and keep him there. And you get him into a position where he's finally willing to say, okay, forget the no trade clause.
Yeah, I don't know. I just am excited to move to a new era of Knicksdom. I think we've all... there's been a good run with this sort of like almost good team, and it's time for them to tear it down.
Has it really been a good run?
Nah, not really. next team, Orlando Magic. Why do the Magic exist at this point?
Well, let's give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt. I want to be a little bit higher on the Magic.
Let's not. They had such a bad offseason.
Okay, they did have a bad offseason in the big picture, but I think in the short term, you can almost justify it. Serge Ibaka is the best player they've had since Dwight Howard.
Yeah, I guess. I think if you're getting Serge Ibaka in the middle of his prime, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, what if you're getting a Serge Ibaka contract year?
Yeah, maybe. That's true. Like, it could make sense, but I still don't understand everything else they've done.
Okay.
Right?
Here's going to be my justification.
Biombo?
Yeah, let me back this idea up, right? They had to have an identity because they've never had one since Dwight left. Their identity has just been, we have guys that we waste and then trade away and they immediately become good. That's been their identity for like 5 years. The identity now is inside out defense. We're going to have Serge Ibaka, quality interior defender. We're going to pair him with a guy like Bismack Biyombo in certain situations. Very quality interior defender. We're going to bring in a coach who's used to building his defense from the inside out, Frank Vogel. We've got a good defender at the point of attack in Elfrid Payton. And we've got a couple of guys who can score if they get lucky. And we're just going to try to grind out super ugly wins in a really crappy conference in a pretty bad division where some of these teams are kind of shaky, like a Miami Heat. They could easily, you know, completely fall apart. That opens up a few wins for a team like Orlando. This is going to be the least inspiring playoff push to try to get to 500, but I think they might have it in them.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I like the idea. They are now intent on playing their only really good player or really interesting prospect, Aaron Gordon. They're going to play him at the three, which makes no sense.
Horrible fit.
And
I agree.
They've added like four guys. They should have traded Vucevic 2 years ago. That would have forced them to solve other issues.
Well, they still have that move in their pocket, right?
I guess. I don't know what you can get for him at this point.
So this is an interesting point. You know, we do the scouts takes doing our preseason preview where it kind of comes down to they basically run down an entire roster and we each do a couple divisions. We mentioned this previously. One of the scouts takes is on guys like Vucevic. If you're a no D5, in other words, if you're a scoring minded center, but you can't defend your position, you're not good. You're not a plus defender. You are now basically worthless. And so Vucevic is now in that category where, like, can you even trade him? So you could throw in guys like Greg Monroe.
I know. I feel bad for all those guys because they're good basketball players. But
maybe they're just not good in the new version of basketball.
Right.
And he's even throwing guys like Kenneth Faried and Julius Randle into that mix because their offensive games are so limited. Like, they almost have the offensive game of a center.
Yeah.
And Vucevic, I mean, he can kind of go to the mid-range and shoot a little bit. But if he's giving it all back on the other end, and you've got really good other options, whether it's an Ibaka or a Biyombo, to just play a really solid, tight, inside-out defense like I mentioned, you know, Vucevic is expendable, and maybe you put him on the trade block. And I think the real question is, can you get anything for him?
Yeah. The Magic are just an abomination. I'm so mad at them for what they did with Oladipo. Oladipo and Hezonja would have been perfect together, and it just, their whole plan makes no sense.
So everybody talks about the 3-and-D guys, so keep an eye out on the no D5s. I think that's a real trend in the NBA. If you're a 5 who can score, like an Al Jefferson type, you know, even a low post scorer type, like a Zach Randolph, you know, he plays the 4, but his offensive game is more like a 5s at this point because he can't stretch out to the 3-point line. Those guys, dying breed.
More interesting than the Orlando Magic. Let's go to Frank Vogel's old team.
Oof.
Pacers. Where do you see them finishing?
The Pacers are the kind of team where you start to think about the guys they've added and you're like, this is a lot of firepower. And then you really start to dig in and you're like, these guys aren't going to be able to stop anybody and their offense isn't going to be nearly as good as it looks on paper. So
a lot of people are starting to say that.
That's where I'm at.
And I was very much all in on the Pacers as like kind of a, well, just because they got solid guys and Paul George is still awesome. Miles Turner should be even better with playing 35 minutes as opposed to 25 minutes. And they, so basically filling out, swapping out like CJ Miles for Jeff Teague as a, in terms of like your secondary score is like a big upgrade. And Thad Young, I'm not sure how good Thad Young is. He's been allegedly good and just like stuck in Brooklyn and Philly for the last 4 years. But.
Well, can we just say like congratulations to Thad Young for not having to play on one of the worst teams in the league? Cause it was Brooklyn and it was Philly and it was Minnesota. I mean, that is a real circuit of decrepitude.
Exactly.
So like, hopefully he's not the problem.
Emancipated Thad Young. I mean, I think he's probably pumped. And the biggest thing, and I wrote about this earlier this week, if you're believing in the Pacers, the best argument is that they always have their shit together and they'll figure out a way to play average defense and the offense will be a lot better. And that puts them in the top half of the East.
I hate to say that I think the Mahinmi loss is going to be a big loss. I think the Mahinmi loss is
going to... A lot of people have told me that.
I think it's going to be a big loss. And when I look at their offense... I do like the Jeff Teague move, offensively speaking. I think that the fit there with Paul George is very interesting, but you're still going to have to play Monta Ellis at some point. They still got guys like Stuckey. So to me, a little bit of their offensive firepower, quote unquote firepower, is redundant. It doesn't really complement each other, right?
Yeah.
I would much prefer a situation where they just had a whole bunch of spot up shooters around Paul George, and Paul George is the main initiator, or Jeff Teague. Maybe you have two playmakers and a bunch of shooters. I don't know if they have enough shooting still. And then I do think they took a big step backwards defensively. I think George Hill is one of the most underrated players in the league in terms of his impact, and it's mostly coming on the defensive end. So to me, they've really been a team in transition these last couple of years. And another question that I have, and this is mostly just from watching, you know, Nate McMillan teams in Portland up close for a number of years, he's put together some efficient offenses, but they've usually been very much, I don't know exactly the right word. He's almost like lording over his offenses. They play very slow, deliberate right. style work. He's got his fingers, you know, kind of like all over his players, you know, almost overbearing in a certain way in terms of the style. And is that what they were going for with Jeff Teague and Monta Ellis and Paul George? I mean, that doesn't seem like quite what you're looking for, right? Like, there's a little clash there. Almost like you want to turn these guys loose and just see what, like, almost like D'Antoni would have right. been the guy here, right? And Nate McMillan is the complete opposite of D'Antoni. And I've heard some people say, oh, Nate's evolved as a coach. He hasn't been a head coach for 3 or 4 or 5 years. So he's going to come back and he's going to be a different guy. I don't know if I buy that. He's kind of a control
freak. So here's the second half of what I was talking about earlier this week. If they don't finish in the top half of the East, if they're like a 7th and 8th seed,
yeah,
close to what they did last year, maybe a couple games better, Paul George is a free agent the year after. Do you think he gets traded this summer?
Oof. I mean, I would really start to think about if I were them. To me, he's kind of got Kevin Durant type aspirations where like...
And, like, don't you think there's been less buzz than you would expect?
Well, I think 80% of NBA fans don't know that Indiana Pacers are in the league. I mean, I think that's a reason. I think there's a real muffler around the Indiana Pacers.
Because George is a legit dude. I mean, he's in that top 10 group. And
he was a top 10 on the SI top 100.
Was he? Good, good. Well, I mean, he's, and, you know, there's all kinds of Boogie rumors. There's Jimmy Butler rumors. But, like, George is a cut above those guys.
Yeah, and I think he's got a little bit of, he likes the limelight, I think. And there's not really a lot of limelight in Indiana. No disrespect to Indiana. Beautiful state. But he has a little bit of the put me on Broadway, like Mello.
Shots fired at Matt Dollinger here.
Yeah, I know. And I think he's got a little bit of the, I want to play on a great team and have fun. Sort of like Kevin Durant.
That's what I want for him, because watching Team USA this summer, him and Durant were unstoppable together. And he's evolved. I mean, he's basically modern day Scottie Pippen.
Let me ask you this.
He needs scoring help.
Did you think he was the second best player on Team USA behind KD?
I did, yeah.
So there you go. I mean, that says to me, if you don't get him some legitimate help in Indiana, you got to be really, really nervous. And if I was the Pacers, I would approach it from an Oklahoma City Thunder mentality of, we don't have a great leverage situation. If he's not happy, if he's not winning big, there's going to be somebody else out there who's offering him a better total package. So you need to get out in front and trade. And you can't get burned. You can't get burned like the Thunder got burned.
There is going to be, there will be options. And I mean, I think.
What about Miami for Paul George? I think he might have a little fun on South Beach.
Oh, Miami is actually not a bad call. I was thinking Boston, they'll have a top 5 pick. Miami could be in that mix.
I mean, I think you got to put the Lakers in the mix for a guy like that.
That's the thing. You could try to swindle the Lakers if they keep their pick. Basically, the options are not bad because they nailed the Miles Turner pick. So even if this doesn't work out with George, they can then rebuild with lottery pick X and Miles Turner and just sort of make it work from there.
I'm with you. They can go a lot of different directions, and I really think that's kind of been their game plan here. It's not that they're going to rush Paul George out the door. They're just going to be prepared. It's like they've got the emergency kit.
Yeah.
They're kind of like putting together the emergency kit in case the earthquake happens.
Yeah. Which, and Larry Bird's smart, man. I mean, he's going all in this year. And if it works, then great.
Yeah.
And if not, that's fine.
And if I'm a Pacers fan, I'm listening to this and I'm saying, screw you guys. We could be the number 2 seed in the Eastern Conference this year. Paul George is the second best player in the conference behind LeBron James. And he's gonna carry it. And he's,
flip side of that, though, is I asked Matt Dollinger, Sports Illustrated's editor, NBA editor.
Who's from Indiana,
diehard Pacers fan. And I was like, so, like, what do you think Paul George is going to do? And he said, like, do you think he could really leave? And he's like, Yeah, I mean, of course he's going to leave.
I know. So what I'm saying, if I'm a Pacers fan, I'm really focusing all of my hopes on this season. And I'm saying, look, the East isn't that great. It never is. Second's always kind of open. They weren't that far from beating the Raptors in the first round, right?
Yeah.
And the Raptors went to the Eastern Conference Finals. So you can talk yourself in, if you're an Indiana fan, that, hey, a miraculous run to the East. Maybe you can knock off Boston in an exciting series. And you know, you're going to go down to Cleveland.
And if George finishes the year top three, top five MVP voting, like he's not going to have one foot out of the door to the point where they like have to deal with
it. Just to be clear, Pacers fans, I'm not really believing your scenario. I'm just saying it's on the table and it's better.
I think it is on the table.
And I think it's better to think about that than to think about the long-term future with Paul George. Cause I do think that gets a little bit, dicey for them.
All right. So let's move to the Heat. Do you think the playoffs are completely out of the question?
Tank this thing completely. I think they should try to go for the number one pick. That's what I think.
Yeah, it definitely seems like Pat Riley's move here is...
I'm just saying, do you want to have 35 wins or Markel Fultz?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, man. I mean, I totally agree. And the other thing is, they don't have draft. The Dragic trade did not work out well.
Was it 17 first round picks or 18 first round picks did they give up? I can't remember.
The next two are gone. So this is their last first round pick until like 2020, the next presidential election.
Better make it count.
Yeah. So I think it's a decent move to expect them to sort of tread water a little bit this year. I will say that I was around them for a couple days, 2 weeks ago, maybe, and for a story. And there's the outline of a team that could be like pretty annoying in the East. And this will be a test for Spo. Like he may be a good enough coach so that they can just be one of those teams that hangs around and sneaks in as like a fun seventh or eighth seed. Because like Justice Winslow should get better this year. Josh Richardson is excellent. Tyler Johnson also pretty good, and Dragic without Wade might be a lot better than the version we got the last 2 years.
Yeah, if I'm Riley, I'm like screwing with the coaches' room's equipment. I'm like deleting game tapes. Like, oh, I'm sorry, Eric. I don't know what happened.
That's
like,
the other factor.
I'm cutting off the Wi-Fi. Like, I'm sabotaging my own coaching staff because you're right. Spoelstra is a really good coach, and he's got a bunch of overachievers on that team. And I think it really starts with Winslow. I mean, Winslow is the kind of guy who makes tanking difficult because he just helps in so many different ways, even though he's so young. Here's the thing about Dragic, though. Everybody remembers him at his peak, that one amazing All-NBA season. He has been that guy one time in the last decade. Yeah. I don't think that's ever coming back. I don't think even with a greater role, I don't think he's going to have that same level of impact. He might get some numbers now that Wade's not there because his usage is going to be so high. I don't think he's that star type player for them. And if I were them and I was looking down the barrel of a long-term contract for him, he'd be somebody I'd be trying to move. I'd be putting him on the trade block, basically ASAP. I'd be looking at teams like Sacramento that need a point guard. Anybody else that needs a point guard.
That's not a bad idea.
I'd be really auctioning him pretty hard. And then I would kind of...
I like the idea of Riley in sabotage mode.
Well, here's my question, though. I mean, wouldn't you be in sabotage mode if you were banking on Hassan Whiteside carrying your team after you've lost Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and Luol Deng?
Yeah.
I mean, screams tank.
I was talking to Rohan yesterday, another SI employee who is a Heat fan, and he said he was like pretty happy and was talking about how Pat Riley said, you know, this year, Hassan's probably, he got paid. He's not going to be chasing stats as much. And I was like, it's not a great situation if the president of your team has to publicly clarify that the star player isn't going to be chasing stats.
Well, here's how I would kind of compare it, right? Remember when the Mavericks went after DeAndre Jordan?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of questions about, can this guy really be a number one option? Can he take over from a Dirk Nowitzki? And I think most people would agree at this point, after we've had some more evidence, that's never going to be who DeAndre Jordan is. I think Hassan Whiteside's a better offensive player than DeAndre Jordan. I don't think he's ever the best offensive player on a team that's actually really good with an efficient offense. I just think that's too much for him. That's not a knock on him. I think he can be a nice all-around two-way guy.
Yeah.
But I think he's a third guy, right?
I think he's a solid second guy because he's very good. The question is whether he's going to age by the time the rest of the roster catches up.
Yeah.
But
so they got to blow that thing up.
Yeah. All right. That's a solid conclusion. Bulls. Who will lose his mind first, Fred Hoiberg or Jimmy Butler?
I think Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
I mean, I would already have lost my mind even before I showed up to training camp when you're just, you know, flipping through your phone, seeing how their summer is unfolding, listening to the quotes from the front office.
So far, my favorite part of preseason NBA has been Bulls quotes as they're all talking. Like the funniest media day quotes by far are the Bulls earnestly talking about making it work and how they're all going to start sharing the ball and start shooting threes. And
the real star from that has been Dwayne, because Dwayne Wade's always saying, you know, me, Rajon, and Jimmy, we've been really encouraging each other to shoot more three-pointers. We've really been talking about how we're going to share the leadership. I'm sure this is like the real like nuclear triad summit, yeah. Right? I mean, give me a break.
It's great. I do think that the Bulls, I think they're going to be better than like the basketball internet thinks they are.
I think
they're going to be solidly 42, 43 wins and like a real bummer of an eighth seed.
Can they play defense well enough to really make that happen?
Yeah, I think they'll figure it out. I also think people forget Mirotić is very good and will help space the floor more than people realize.
Yeah, I also think people forget that you need to be able to make three-pointers. And these guys...
Yeah,
I'm not buying Dwayne Wade's two pull-up threes.
Did you not hear what I just said about Mirotić, though?
Oh, so he's going to be the...
He's good, yeah. He shot like 44%.
You know who I like more than Mirotić at that spot?
Who?
Bobby Portis. I'm like Bobby Portis' number one fan. I'm completely buying Bobby Portis stock after Summer League.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like he's one of those guys who's going to just play himself into minutes where they have to make a trade to like set him up.
He's got the classic... He's the classic Summer League superstar.
I'm ready.
Who really
made the translation?
There's a lot of hype following Bobby Portis.
But no, to boil it down, I don't think that they're going to be able to make it work. And the guy who I blame is Rondo. And I think Rondo basically, you know, he's moving around so much because no one really is viewing him in the same way he views himself. And I think if you're a guy like Jimmy Butler in your prime, you're going to look at Rajon Rondo and say, bro, 2011, 2012, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
That style doesn't work. You're not helping us win. And you're wondering, why does this guy have the ball in his hands all the time? And so I think it would really drive him crazy. And I don't think Hoiberg's going to be driven crazy before Butler. So I'm not
no
sure he
took a psychotic break for Fred Hoiberg.
I'm just not totally sure he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's almost like too nice. And like, I'm not sure he really has
know.
A real.
Hoiberg played in the NBA. He was an executive.
Did he look like he had a real firm grasp on either their team last year or their summer plans this summer? He was just along for the ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's just being walked down into a dark alley.
He might be too nice.
I think their front office lured him into a dark alley, you know, and then they're going to basically steal his wallet and leave him for dead.
When I talked to my scout for the NBA preview issue, direct quote was, I feel so bad for Fred. He was the fucking mayor in Iowa, and now he's got to coach this debacle. It's tough. I think he could be a good coach elsewhere, but he might just be better off triumphantly returning to Ames, Iowa. No, is that
that sounds right. Yeah, Mayor of Ames. I think there's a 50-50 shot. He gets blamed for this, though. Don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't he being set up?
Oh, definitely.
Because they're going to be like, look, we gave you all this talent. How many all-stars do you want in your starting lineup? And you're going, well, they're not really all-stars.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they're kind of all-stars.
Yeah. We should move on from the Bulls. We'll have plenty of time to make fun of them all year. Quick question. Who finishes higher between the Hornets and Pistons?
Well, I don't love either one of these teams.
Yeah.
I would say actually still the Hornets. The Reggie Jackson thing really threw me for a loop because my big problem with the Pistons, I kept saying it last year, was what great health they had. Especially among their key guys. They didn't really go that deep, but they had a nice consistency with their starting five, and especially after they got Tobias in there, where those guys were just logging big minutes together, they were able to find a plus unit, and they just rode it into the ground. You take Reggie Jackson out of there, I think that means slow start for the Pistons. It's going to mean continuity issues kind of once he gets back into it.
I'm pretty worried. I doubted the Pistons last year.
Yeah.
And then they started really hot.
Yeah.
And I felt awful. I was like, all these years of talking up Stan Van Gundy, and
you got burned by your own.
Yeah, I betrayed him at the last minute, and it was not fun. But at the same time, like I share your concerns with the Pistons.
But I don't love the Hornets either. Do you love the Hornets?
The Hornets are one of those teams where, like, if they disappeared from the NBA, I'm not sure anyone would miss them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty forgettable. I mean, I do like that MKG's back. That'll be a fun couple weeks.
Yeah. Come on. That's much meaner than my...
Hey,
we
I
should
love,
just delete this franchise.
I love Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. There's nothing more that I want to see than 82 games from him. I just can't talk myself into it again, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's... He was great for about a game and a half last year when he came back. I would like to move the Hornets or the Magic to Seattle.
Ooh.
And then move the Wolves to the East.
Okay.
That's my NBA dream long term.
You kind of want to open the path up for Towns to like take.
Yeah, you know, I think it's in everyone's best interest to.
Can the Pelicans get in on this? Like, I guarantee you, Tom Benson, like even in the middle of his arguments with his family over his estate, is going to like stop the legal proceedings and say, "Hey, come on, can we get a little realignment?"
Another team we should address: the Atlanta Hawks.
Well, can I say one more thing about the Hornets, though?
What?
A lot of guys got paid this summer. Batum, Marvin Williams. A lot of their upward momentum last year, I think, was driven by those guys, those contract year guys, right? So are we going to assume when there's like a collective hangover among their key guys? And then also a question is, can Kemba really take another step past what he did last year? Or was that sort of, you know, peak Kemba, best Kemba? I kind of wonder about that.
I think Kemba's going to be awesome, but I love any sort of contract year theory. And I mean, I've definitely talked to people who are like, yeah, beware of getting too hyped for Marvin Williams. That was like a 1 year thing. And then the Batum, it's hard to figure out how good he is. I think he's definitely super useful in the new NBA.
I just don't think you're ever
like
going to get
$100 million useful.
Totally. And I don't think you're ever going to get as much as you think or want from him. I just think he's one of those guys where he's a BB plus guy, and the A plus potential that you're hoping for from him, that everybody's been hoping for from 5 or 6 years, is just not there.
Yeah. Speaking of teams that are going to be in the mix for like the top half of the East, are we setting ourselves up for like a Hawksy season, a season of Hawks like praise as they sort of gut out a 2 seed or 3 seed?
I think we're far more likely setting ourselves up for like another year of Dwight screwed it up.
I don't know.
All right.
I think I believe in Dwight, which is going to be, it's a scary place to be right now.
Is it just because he's going back to the East and like it's such a weaker set of, I mean, like there's Drummond's over there, but I mean, who else is really, you know, night to night?
I think he's excited for a fresh start. He's healthy, which who knows how long that'll last, but I think he and Harden hated each other.
I think that's true.
So I think they're both in a better place.
Can I actually tell you that I was in on the Dwight and Harden thing not working from the very beginning? I actually was at one of their very first preseason games. These guys don't even want to stand within 15 feet of each other in Houston.
Here's the key, though. The Dwight and Harden thing did work for 1 year.
Well, maybe
2 years.
I think it worked for about 3 months. Because remember, he was so injured in their one good year. And then he came back like right before.
Yeah.
And it kind of worked. They kind of like slapped it together. So I actually think him being away was almost like an addition by subtraction thing that year, where he probably would have worn out his welcome had he been healthy the whole time. But he like popped back in just at the right moment.
That's actually a good point.
A light dose of Dwight.
Bottom line is I think Dwight this year can help Atlanta, and they have enough pieces to where they could totally be a thing where like NBA Twitter is worshiping Coach Buds by March.
I could
March.
See that. Well, so here's I'm going to make your argument for you. Does it help Dwight that there is no Harden-like presence in Atlanta, where now it's kind of his personality, his team, right? Because there's no Teague. Kyle Korver, I mean, he's playing dodgeball during the summer. Like, he's not a guy who's going to be like conflicts and egos with his teammates, right? And then you look at Millsap. I mean, what, mild mannered? Doesn't that get thrown into like basically every one sentence description of Paul Millsap you'll ever read?
Yeah.
So maybe this becomes a team that gets built into Dwight's image and there's not that friction.
Let me say also that this team is like designed. You could not design a team I would be less interested in.
That's why I think they're going to be bad. Because I think that you have an innate understanding of what a good team is supposed to be.
I don't think so. I think they're gonna excel at a lot of the less exciting phases of the game. Dwight is prominently involved. I've never liked Dwight, but I think it's going to add up to a team that's like two or three in the East.
I just worry that the magic with them was the Millsap-Horford pairing and how versatile, interchangeable, and spread-oriented those guys were. And now you're basically saying, Millsap, like everything that worked really well with your last guy, we're flipping on its head. And now we're giving you a completely different type of center. And I don't know if that's going to work. I mean, Dwight, yeah. Low post-oriented, is he the same defensive player? He didn't have that big defensive impact last year. Can he stay healthy? And then how much does he basically override the beautiful passing of the Hawks offense with his own desire for the ball? That's what I worry about.
I'm just saying, we're going to be talking about the beautiful passing of the Hawks offense, which is like gets the ultimate eye roll from me, but I think that it's going to work this year.
Well, do you think that part of what Coach Bud's going to be doing is like just distracting Dwight with like candy and like all the stuff that Dwight loves? Like, yeah. Is that going to be a part of his
candy,
like
candy, assault rifles, snakes? Dwight, awesome guy, great representative.
No, but that's going to be a huge challenge for him, right?
Yeah.
You have to keep him happy.
Strippers.
You have to keep Dwight happy. You just do.
Sure.
And I don't think that's going to be. I mean, if I'm Coach Bud, I'm not going to sacrifice a beautiful offense for Dwight.
I think he's happy just to be home and not with James Harden.
Really?
Yeah.
If he's getting 8 or 9 attempts a game, he's going to stay happy?
I think so. Only because I think he's trying to turn over a new leaf.
I think it sounds like you really believe in the power of the city of Atlanta.
Maybe. A lot of churches around Atlanta.
Is that what they call strip clubs now?
Yeah. Dwight will visit it will hit every hot spot.
Gold Club was a church?
Have you seen the show Atlanta?
No, I haven't, but I've heard good things.
That's like the one thing that is really, I got to knock that out in the next week or two. But from the Hawks to Al Horford's new team.
Yeah.
Tell me why the Celtics can't win the East.
Well, there's two words.
Yeah.
LeBron James. But I think if anything goes wrong with Cleveland, if there's any team that's going to knock them off, I think it's the Boston Celtics.
I was looking at the over-unders this morning. It's ridiculous that they're only at 52.5.
And it's a big jump from last year. And what you can make the argument that Horford's not the kind of guy who's going to give you like an extra 15 wins. But I think when you have Stevens and just the mix of talented and plus players that they've got, the depth, they're basically covered at every spot. They're well protected against injury issues. I could see them putting together, making a run at 60 wins.
Yeah, I think 60. I think they're going to finish first in the East.
Wow.
And
that's pretty hot.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, I just think that like the Cavs are in a spot where they shouldn't really expend a crazy amount of energy on the regular season. And that sets up perfectly for the Celtics. I don't want the Celtics to make the finals, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if this was just kind of like a down year where the Cavs never really get going and it just lines up.
It all sounds good until you have to have, you know, a guy like Jay Crowder. In past years, we've seen a Damari Carroll for the Hawks try to go and stop LeBron with the season on the line. It just doesn't work. I love Jay Crowder as much as everybody. I'm on that train, but you have to have a more physical answer for LeBron. You have to have multiple defensive options to throw at him. Who's going to do it on that team?
Did you know there has not ever been a finals rematch for 3 years in a row?
I did know that. I'm pretty sure I probably told you that.
Sounds like a Golliver stat.
Did you also know that no team's ever won 67 games 3 years in a row, and Golden State is going to try to become the first team to do that?
Okay, see, it's and second no team, Golliver stat.
No team's even come close, by the way. The Bulls were the closest. Their third year, they only got 62.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyways, file that away. The Celtics, I'm not necessarily, maybe after the next hour or two, I'll pick the Celtics.
Well, you know, I remember when I dropped the first ability is availability and you made fun of me last week for that maxim. Well, here's another one we've learned. And actually, I think LeBron's taught us this and the Warriors have taught us this. Unprecedented is not the same thing as impossible, okay? Just because we haven't seen the same teams go head-to-head 3 years in a row doesn't mean we should completely rule it out.
You sound like a trainer, like Tim Grover.
No, but do you know what I mean?
No. I totally know
what
you mean.
He's had a stranglehold.
That's not the basis for me picking the Celtics. And okay. I don't want to. It's not that I'm rude. I think it would be a lot more fun to have a Cavs-Warriors rematch, but I just feel like people, like the Celtics, they have a mix that's going to work really, really well.
Here's my dream scenario. Boston realizes they're onto something. They start hot, everything comes together, and they start to think, this is our year. Cleveland's a little bit vulnerable.
Yeah.
If we load up at the trade deadline, if we cash in some of those future draft picks, if we find a way to kind of package some of those smaller contracts together, can they go add the star? Who might it be? A Jimmy Butler you could throw at LeBron. Could it be a Paul Millsap? You just add another nice defensive piece to that front court. Can they swing for, you know, one of these, you know, secondary level stars, add him to the mix where you can kind of tilt the balance in that potential Eastern Conference final series? That's my dream scenario. I just don't think, as currently constituted, they've got enough to get over Cleveland.
Yeah.
But they do have a lot of really quality defensive guards you could throw at Kyrie. I think you can neutralize Kyrie, you know, with a guy like an Avery Bradley or a Marcus Smart. It just comes down to, do you have somebody who can make LeBron not be A-plus LeBron? Do you have that Iguodala, I mean, or the Kawhi Leonard?
Jaylen Brown can chase him around.
Okay, come on.
Jay Crowder is like having a linebacker on the floor, which is exactly what you need to slow LeBron down.
LeBron is the kind of guy who chucks through linebackers who are sized like Jay Crowder.
Yeah.
Damari Carroll, those guys just bounce off of him. He's not there.
Yeah, look, the argument against the Cavs is not going to be rooted in a lot of, like, reason right now. I just feel like
something's going to go wrong.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard for them to keep it going for another 8 months.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that 45 minutes into the podcast. That would have been a great thing to start this episode off with.
That's true. All right, well, I think that's a good place to end on the East. We could go deep on the Wizards or Raptors or
we can't go in a whole podcast without mentioning teams like the Raptors, right?
how can anyone forget the Raptors?
Well,
you're serious. Okay.
No, I was serious because, sure. Well, look, they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. They brought back their most important players.
Yeah.
DeMar DeRozan. They lost to Biombo. But that's a team that always is striving for acceptance and attention, right?
Yeah.
If we don't give them attention now, when are we going to give them attention?
How would you feel if you were a Raptors fan? I feel like they've sort of peaked.
I would be worried that last year was as good as it's going to get.
Right.
That Kyle Lowry is going to, you know, go all out in pursuit of his own contract year. It's going to work really well for him. And then they're going to make a gigantic commitment that's going to last like 3 years too long to him. I'd worry about paying DeMar DeRozan. You know, he was not happy, actually, with the top 100. Did you hear about that?
No.
He personally, at Media Day, called us stupid for ranking him in the mid-40s.
That's fair, man.
Why?
I mean, I don't think he's any higher than the mid-40s, but...
Well, so how is it fair if you agree with us?
Because if you're a player, you should be like, who the hell is Ben Golliver? Who the hell is Rob Mahoney? I don't blame them at all.
You can say whatever you want about me. Leave Rob out.
That's
of
true. Sure. Sure.
I'm like Derrick Rose at the trial. Well, what'd you say about my mom?
The flip side of your Raptors. Like, I really think if I were a Raptors fan, I would be like, you know what? Like, I'm not into the like virtual GM mode that like so many basketball fans live in. Like, this team is just awesome. And I don't care if they're going to overpay Lowry. Like, Lowry is the best thing to happen to our team for like 15 years.
Top five point guard.
Yeah. And those home games are a lot of fun. And so there's all kinds of reasons to sort of like downplay the Raptors, which is what I was doing 4 minutes ago. But.
Well, here's another one for you. The Biombo defection is a big loss. It's right up there. It's right up there with the Mahimi loss.
The Raptors are the team that I want them to trade for Nerlens. I think he could help them a lot. And
tell me more.
Well, no, I just think it's a good spot, and Nerlens could be really good somewhere, but he needs a good team and like a environment that's not screwed up.
Speaking of no D5s, Jahlil Okafor, number one no D5 in the NBA right
Tough
now.
Tough to trade right now.
Very difficult. I love that idea. Nerlens would plug and play perfectly for them. It'd be the closer when you would take, you know, Valanciunas out in the fourth quarter and you'd have Nerlens as your closer. Let's get that done. Can we just like sign off on that? Or is Philadelphia now a real team where they're just not giving away players?
Yeah. Well, I think Philly is holding out for best offers on those guys, and they're just not going to, It's going to be until January, I bet.
So here's what we need. We need Terrence Ross to come out of the gate and just shoot like 48% from three-pointers for like the first month
Terrence
of the season.
I think Terrence Ross would legitimately help the Sixers.
Well, you are wearing a University of Washington sweatshirt right now, so that's not the most surprising take in the world.
But
don't you think that's like where you had to start on a New Orleans package, Terrence Ross?
Let me ask you, when will the Sixers make the playoffs? Related to our Terrence Ross New Orleans discussion.
Well, we were talking about the Raptors, so it's almost like the Mesozoic era. I mean, I think we're talking eras here.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be like the next 3 years. I think it's going to be some future era of the NBA when the Sixers make the playoffs. They're a long, long ways away. I mean, last week you were trying to tell me.
7-year process.
You were trying to tell me like Jared Bayless and Sergio Rodriguez are guys I'm supposed to get excited about. I mean, cast-offs from like, you know, backups of backups off good teams from like 6 years ago.
Well, I just think that they're going to be okay, and then add in a couple really good young players.
They're going to be terrible this year.
Yeah, fair enough.
Not okay. They're going to be terrible. I think there's an okay future with Ben, centered around Ben Simmons within 3 years.
I think they're going to be more respectable, and they're going to be terrible but respectable, whereas like they were straight up unwatchable for the last couple of years. Dario and Embiid will make it
this
fun.
This has been a 4-year long walk of shame. So to say they're going to be more respectable than a 4-year walk of shame is really not saying anything.
Yeah. Okay. Fine.
But I agree. They will be more respectable.
Can we finish on my Wizards actually?
Yeah.
Wizards.
How many teams have we left off? That's what I want to know.
We left off the Bucks, which is fine. And I think we've hit everybody else.
How depressing was Chris Middleton's injury?
We'll hit every team in the East today.
So you're trying to bail out. You want to do all 15. Let's do it.
Is the Middleton injury a blessing in disguise?
No, it's just horrible. Why does everyone want to spin bad news into good news? I know that's like
why
the new trend.
Everyone or me? I look at it as a blessing
okay,
in disguise.
Okay, tell me why.
Because their roster is just screwed up.
Yeah.
And they need a chance to like, they need a chance to tank one more, get one more piece, and then maybe deal Jabari if it doesn't look like he and Giannis are going to be a good pair together. But if Chris Middleton were healthy, I'm not sure they're a playoff team anyways.
Okay.
And so now they're going to actually have an excuse to be really not very good.
I thought there was a way they could try to catch lightning in a bottle. Like their best five, if it's Giannis, Middleton, Jabari, Giannis probably playing the role of point guard on offense, whatever other shooter you could throw out there, and a guy like John Henson. I thought you could have a five there that would be very good defensively.
Uh-huh.
And good enough to get by offensively, probably a little bit more exciting than actually efficient, but good enough to get by. I thought that had the makings of a playoff team. Middleton needed to play like 37 minutes a night in that scenario to make it work.
Yeah.
You take him out, now they're falling apart.
Dele is great.
Dele might have been one of the five. He might have been the spacer off of Giannis, and that might have been the way to do it. And I think if you have Giannis, Dele, Middleton, Jabari as your stretch four, and Henson, that to me is a team that probably could have won 45 games. If all those guys stay healthy in a best case scenario, they could have had a ceiling. But that's why I don't see it as a good scenario, because you take Middleton out of there, now you're nothing. You're just mush. You know, now you're just Giannis and a bunch of guys running around. It's like a street ball team.
I would argue that the Bucks have not really made many like great additions. I bet Dele is helpful, but that's kind of like a second tier addition. Mirza Teletovic.
Yeah.
He's great. But again, like that's kind of like a bench guy. Like every big move they've made, they've flunked. Like they're spending a lot of money on three kind of average slash below average big guys.
Doesn't it kind of feel like their summer was like, hey, we're a 55 win team. We're trying to take the next step. So like, we're going to add like Teletovic.
The foundation does not make a lot of sense. That includes Jason Kidd. Like, I'm not sure how great he is, and he's had a lot of influence on what they do. So if I were a Bucks fan, I would not be too upset about the chance for them sort of like pressing reset. The one thing that would bum me out is the potential for them to say, well, we were in great shape until Chris Middleton went down, and not really like address some of the more structural stuff.
Use it as an excuse.
Yeah.
Can I point out one other thing? We've probably talked about the Bucks here for at least 3 or 4 minutes. The name that we have not mentioned, Greg Monroe, another no D5. This is when I'm going back to the no D5s. These guys are worthless now. They're just irrelevant. You don't even consider them part of the core or the structure, even though he's relatively young and under contract, you know, a pretty big contract number. We don't even talk about him as this foundational player for them. That's where the league is kind of trending. I think it's just another thing to kind of point out with those guys is if you do try to trade him, what are you going to get for him if you don't even mention him as one of their best players and he's on such a bad team?
Yeah, well, he doesn't fit with the other guys that they have.
He hardly fits anywhere. I mean, those guys just don't fit anymore.
Yeah, I think you can play one guy who's not good on defense the same way you can have like one guy who can't shoot.
But guys like Jabari who can score.
I was
going to
say, Jabari's that guy.
That's what I mean. Like, and that's a very common thing. You know, a stretch four who doesn't play defense, who can light it up on offense is something that teams go out and look for.
Yeah.
They're valuable. They have like, repercussive benefits on their teammates in terms of creating space for other guys. And they can try to exploit mismatches because not a lot of guys can defend those players. But often those guys can't play defense. And so you need someone who can play defense alongside them. And if you're Greg Monroe, you're going to wind up being the odd man out almost anywhere you go.
The answer for the Bucks right now, just watch the Vines. Don't watch the games.
See, that's
enjoy
good.
Giannis. Giannis has all-star vibes this year. I feel like he's going to average close to triple-double. People freak out. And other than that, just chill and wait until next year.
You think he makes the all-star team this year?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because he's really good and people are ready to sort of see him take that next step.
Should he have changed his name when he came to the NBA?
To what?
Just for marketing purposes.
Like, no.
Just like last name, like Anthony, like Giannis Anthony. Like if he
man, I think the true sign of a star is he makes you learn to spell his name. I've learned to spell Dwayne Wade with his weird Y placement. I have yet to learn Giannis Antetokounmpo.
You didn't even come close to pronouncing it right.
No, Antetokounmpo, right?
Okay.
I think that's correct. Right. I think there's a D in there that really throws people off.
There's no D.
No, but there's a D in the pronunciation.
All right, okay.
Anyways, see, this is what he has to prove this year. Get all of America on board.
The other
with
thing
his
I would have done with him is just gone the Brazilian route and just put Giannis on the back of the jersey.
That's not a bad idea.
See?
That's solid.
I'm trying to rebrand him for the masses.
Gulliver Consulting. All right. Last question. How I need an outsider's objective opinion of the Wizards.
The thing with the Wizards is they're another one of those teams like Indiana where I want to talk myself into them making the Eastern Conference Finals. Like there's a scenario where I could see that happening. If it's and it mostly comes down to Beal being that 75 games this year, big scoring number, and then like,
are you team Beal or team Wall?
Well, what do you mean like?
Or team Tomas?
Can we like give them one of those marriage last names that merges like wheel? Like am I team wheel or like ball, team ball? I think it can work. I don't understand why they have to hate each other.
No, I don't think they hate each other. I think they're both a little bit skeptical of each other, which is fair.
They don't need a shooting coach. They need a shot selection coach. That is the most important thing. They got to cut out these like just fatty long twos. Focus more on threes and drives. Beal's got to figure out how to add the consistent, high free throw games. Like that has to be a thing. He just goes to the line 6 times a game, every game. That has to be a thing for him. And he's got to figure out how to do that while staying healthy. I don't know if that's possible, but that's the scenario where they go far. The backfire scenarios are endless.
Where I've been is like the Wizards, it's either going to click and work like better than anyone expects, or it could get pretty ugly. Cause like Wall doesn't seem like he's completely healthy, doesn't look like he's in shape. And I could see them going 52-30. I could also definitely see them going 30-52.
Ooh,
it's just not. So and there's a.
Everything's on the table.
Yeah. Bottom line is I'm really excited about Tomas Satoransky.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. Rookie who they drafted above Draymond Green. Which I will remember forever, but he has arrived and he's just in practice. He's doing 360 dunks. He's kind of built like Sean Livingston and I'm all in on him. The rest of the Wizards is a hard wait and see.
Well, you've got a star in Wall. You've got a potential star in Beal. You've got rim protection at the five in Mahinmi.
You've got
And you've got an offensive five in Gortat.
Cult hero in Martian Gortat.
You've got a very naturally fitting stretch four in Morris. You've got some versatile length on the perimeters. That's going to be my really polite way of talking about Porter and and Oubre and some of these other kind of like
versatile length.
You know, these weaker links.
Uh-huh.
You've got a lot of things that good teams have, so it really should work. And you've got a coach with playoff experience. I mean, that's the nice way to talk about Scott Brooks.
Yeah.
It seems like it really does seem like though. Here's my point. There is a ceiling to these guys. Like, it does seem like their best case scenario is actually a lot higher than people would give them credit for.
Definitely.
And that could wind up being Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah. They'll play the Celtics after a massive
upset. LeBron's not even going to make it out of the second round.
That's a good place for us to end our Eastern Conference preview.
Perfect place then.
Check back for the West on Monday.
Your reign is over, LeBron.
Please, no open letters to LeBron. Check back on Monday for our Western Conference talk, and then we'll have more next week.
Quick picks.
What?
Cavs over Celtics. That's my Eastern Conference Finals pick.
Okay.
How about you?
I'll bite the bullet and pick the Celtics to make the finals.
Do you think the Cavs will make the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So we got the same two teams in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah.
So that definitely won't happen.
Yeah, all right. Good. Great place to end.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.